We'll be in Genesis chapter 1 this morning. While I'm thinking about it, I've been meaning to mention this for the last two or three weeks. In about 2 months, we're going to be going through the book of Micah, and one of the minor prophets in the Old Testament. And very seldom do you see people spend a whole lot of time in the minor prophets, and you know, you may catch a verse here and there. And the reason for that is they're kind of difficult, and they're hard to read, hard to stay focused on, or at least it is for me as a read. The reason I tell you that is because I'm going to give you about 2 months' notice and challenge you to start reading the book of Micah just over and over and over again. You can read it aloud, the entire book, in 17 minutes. I know because I can read it. You can surely read it fast as I can. But just start reading it, and when we get there, you'll be familiar with it, and it'll come easier to you. For the next, today and the next 3 weeks, as you've heard the last 2 weeks, we're sort of, John called it doing our own thing. We're just, our topics are not related necessarily. Mine is not to what John and Marshall preached on, and theirs is not to me. And this morning, I want to talk to you about, you see, I've got titled, The Charge to Exercise Dominion. And we'll be in Genesis chapter 1. This subject and this thought has been something that has been cooking, you might say, in my own thoughts and my mind for 20 or 25 years. This thought, I was first introduced to the idea of, or gave it some thought for the first time 20, 25 years ago when reading a book by Gary North. And some of you may be familiar with Gary North. And he talked about dominion and exercising dominion on the earth, and was introduced to an idea that had come to be called dominion theology. Reconstruction theology. You may have heard some of those terms. Over the past few years, I listened to, one time at least, I listened to little bits of Charles Capps. And I heard Charles Capps mention the word dominion. I'm not recommending you listen to Charles Capps. You can listen to him one time and pretty well get everything he's got. But he throws out that word dominion. So it's a word that's there, and I want to use it this morning, and I'm reading a text that uses that word. Your text may not use the word dominion, it may use the word rule, but we're going to talk about the difference between those two words. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, and God said, I tell you what, let's back up and just start at verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, Let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. And God said, Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And it was so. The earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. And God created great whales and every living creature that moves, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the sea, and let fowl multiply in the earth. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth a living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them. And God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. We'll be honing in on verses 26 and 28, where you see in verse 26, God says, let's make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over. Then he makes a list. Verse 28, God blessed them. God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over. And then he lists several things. This morning I'm going to be saying some things that and suggesting some things and some activities that you're going to look at me and say, he doesn't do that. He may be suggesting that for us, but he doesn't do that. And you'll be right. I'm going to be suggesting some principles and some ideals that are very difficult to live up to, that are very difficult to be consistent in doing. Let me give you a couple examples. These are not examples of the things I'll be talking about, but just an example to show you the difficulty we have sometimes in making decisions. What if you saw me one day and I had a lottery ticket in my hand? It's a $1 lottery ticket. I bought a lottery ticket for $1. Would you look at me and look at that, seeing that, and think that I had done a horrible thing? Okay, some people say no. Some people are wondering what's next. Spending a dollar on a lottery ticket is not the end of the world, is it? What if you found out that I spend $2,000 a month on lottery tickets? And you find out because somebody's come to you, maybe me, asking you to help support me. I don't have enough money to feed my groceries for my wife. I've been spending $2,000 a month on lottery tickets. What would you think about that? Tim says I got a problem. Leslie agrees. Is it a bad enough problem that you think somebody would be brazen enough to talk to me about it? Okay, so $2,000 a month lottery ticket, somebody's going to be bold enough to confront me about. A $1 lottery ticket one time is no big deal. Somewhere in between there's a line that is crossed. Where is that line? I don't know. I don't know. But you see the difficulty we face, and some things are very obvious, either side, but all that's in the middle, we struggle to understand. We struggle to come to grips with. Suppose I go to a diner after church today to eat lunch, and I'm given a choice of drink. I can drink unsweetened tea, or I can choose sweetened tea. Which would be the best choice? I hear unsweetened tea. Now, let's distinguish what we mean by better. Let's define better. Better for you. Water. If I had to choose between sweet tea and unsweet tea, which one would be best? Unsweet tea, most people will say, I think. Why? No calories, no sugar. Is sugar bad? For me, it's bad. That's bad. So, to choose the unsweetened tea or to choose water would be a better choice than choosing, let's say, water and tea. To choose the water would be a better choice than to choose the tea. Is that right? Am I obliged to make the best choice? Am I foolish to make a less than best choice? Depends on the consequences, perhaps. All right, you see, we make choices, consciously make choices, that we know a better choice could be made, yet we don't make it, and we don't feel any remorse about it. At what point do things have to get to such an extent that there's an issue? I don't know. But there are lots of things in life that are that way. And that difficulty is some of the things that we're going to look at as we talk about our subject matter today. All right, I'm going to be just suggesting some things that are ideals. And I guess I wish that I could live up to some of these things. I don't. First of all, see on your outline, why use the word dominion? Okay, most of your Bibles may use the word rule there. Let them rule over these things. There's two or three reasons why I would use the word dominion, or I want to use the word dominion. First of all, it's a little less common word, and so it's going to stick with you. You're going to associate with the ideas that I'm talking about a little easier. That's the first thing. The second thing is the word rule is more singularly focused. And when we talk about ruling, we tend to think of a king or someone who is in authority over other people. We kind of start there, and we may spread our definition out a little bit. But when we talk about ruling, someone ruling, we tend to think of an authority that's in ruling over a geographical area or a certain nation of people. And thirdly, is I want to use the word dominion because it is used in other contexts, and I want to distinguish between what I call the creation ordinance to take dominion over the earth, and some other modern dominion usages of that word. You heard me mention a while ago dominion theology and Gary North, an author. I like to read. I haven't read very much of Gary North's stuff in quite a while, but I like to read him. He challenges me. But there are some things about his theology I just don't agree with. And dominion theology, their teaching there, is one of those things. I'm not a Reconstruction theology guy. All right? The basic idea of Reconstruction theology and dominion theology is that it is imperative for the Christian to subdue the earth and to control the earth politically and in every way, that Christians would be in charge, if it means so, by force. I don't see Christianity headed that. I don't see the Bible teaches that, and I sure don't see the world headed that direction. All right? Dominion theology, in fact, Gary North made the statement in an appendix in a book I read that he thought that the day would come when the Reconstructionists, theologians in the Reconstruction camp, would unite with certain elements of the Charismatic camp. Now, those seem like to me to be totally opposites. His thought was the Charismatics have the charisma to get a following, and we have the correct theology to put a foundation for it. And as far as I know, that has not taken place, and that's been 20, 25 years ago. I don't see much progress being made in that regard. But that is an area that you may see. You will see other Bible teachers, Charismatics and Reconstructionists, use this word, bandy this word about dominion a lot. And that's not what I'm talking about. I may have some agreement with some of those guys in some areas, but not a whole lot. But I want to use that word, dominion, so we can make the distinction. Number two, what do we mean by dominion? The Hebrew word here in Genesis 1 means to tread down. That's an awful-sounding word, isn't it? To tread down gives you the picture in your mind of walking over something. The idea means to subjugate, to have control over, to use, to care for, to bear the responsibility for, to manage profitably. And when you think of the mandate to us and God's charge to us to take dominion over the earth is a pretty good sized place. And it's hard for me to wrap my mind around mankind taking dominion over this huge sphere that we call earth, the planet earth. And I want to give you an illustration that may be a little more understandable. I know there could be holes in my illustration. When Susan and I went on a little vacation a month or two ago, on our way back, we were going through Kentucky and stopped and toured this big fancy house that was built in about 1860. Family named Clay. And the man's name is Cassius Clay. Now, you're thinking of Muhammad Ali. Certainly wasn't him, but I wouldn't doubt but what he was. Somebody in the past was named him after these people. But the dad, his name was Green Clay. And Green Clay owned whole counties back in the early 1800s. He owned hundreds of thousands of acres. Now suppose Green Clay comes to me and he says, "Here is 1,000 acres. I want you to take dominion over that 1,000 acres. What does he have in mind? Stewardship is a good word. Does he have in mind that I would go there and bring in some pulpwood trucks and some loggers and just clear cut that whole thing? And you know what it looks like around here after the loggers get through? Trees bent all over every which way, little saplings, and just strip it all and give him the money for it and say, okay, here's, I took dominion over that 1,000 acres. Is that what he had in mind? Probably not. He wants that 1,000 acres to make him a prophet. He wants that 1,000 acres to be used in such a way that I can live off of it, that I and my family can replenish the earth there and support ourselves in abundance. He wants the land to be used in such a way that it is profitable for me and for him. Now, in a small way, I think that you can see that's what I think that God means when he says, Adam and Eve, replenish the earth, subdue it, take dominion over it. It is to be stewards of the earth and all that is there in such a way that it is to our advantage. It is profitable. It is productive. Number three, does the charge to take dominion continue today? After all, when God told Adam and Eve to take dominion over the earth, this was before the fall. And what changed? What did the pre-fall dominion look like that may be different than today? First of all, what did God tell Adam and Eve to take dominion over? Notice what he says in verse 28. It's pretty much the same list in both verses, I think. Fish. One thing, fish. Another thing is the fowls of the air. Another thing is everything that moves on the earth. Numbers 26, verse 26, you see another thing, the creeps. Everything that creeps on the face of the earth. So God gave Adam and Eve dominion over all the creeps. All right? I don't think, and I think it's pretty obvious, that God is there. He's not giving them a finite list, is he? What he's saying is, over it all. The fish of the sea, the fowl of the air, the cattle, everything that's on the earth, everything that creeps on the earth, you take dominion of it. Everything. That's what he's saying. Take it dominion over all of it. And this was before the fall. What did Adam look like as he did that? I think about doing something like that and I just get tired thinking about it. What about Adam? Let's take, for instance, do you think Adam tired? If we were to tell, someone were to tell one of us, run across the street to the store and get a bag of ice. And they mean run. Some of you could run across the street and run back and perhaps barely be out of breath. Some more of you could run across the street and run back and take a little while to recover. They could tell me to run across the street and I would say, why? That's why I bought a truck. What was Adam like? Did Adam grow weary at the end of an 8-hour day? I doubt if he knew what an 8-hour day was, and I doubt if he was that weary as well. But I think that you can see that most things that Adam was involved in, most activities that Adam was involved in prior to the fall, he was also involved in after the fall. Just because the fall came, it did not change what Adam typically did it? What changed? The way he enjoyed it, for one thing. It wasn't quite as enjoyable after the fall as it was before. Now the weeds brought forth thorns and thistles to scrape and to scratch his skin. Now everywhere he planted a row of green beans, there were much more likely for grass to grow that he did not plant, and who knows where it came from, than his beans to grow that he wants to grow. It is a struggle. The charge to take dominion over the earth is a little more difficult. It's a little more unenjoyable than it was before. The charge is still the same. The design of God and the command of God to take dominion over the earth is still there. It is just feels differently. Of course, there's a lot of other things were changed as well. And then number four, I want to give you some thoughts to ponder concerning dominion today. The first one is this, and this was a new thought to me. I don't know, maybe it seems obvious to you, and maybe you don't agree with it. I don't know, but here's the thought. Taking dominion is a moral issue. Taking dominion over the earth. For you and I to take dominion over the earth is a moral issue. And here's why I think it's a moral issue. Because God said to do it. And when God says for us to do something, it becomes a moral issue whether or not we do it. It becomes a matter of right and wrong. So we are to take dominion over the earth. And it is a matter of right and wrong. It is a matter of righteousness, whether we do it or not. The second point is this. The proper exercise of dominion is a moral issue. It's not just a matter of whether or not we do it, but it's a moral issue as to how efficiently we do it. Now, why is that? It's because we are to reflect God's image on the earth. God said, "Let's make man in our image, after our likeness, and let him have dominion over the sea and the fish and the fowl and all these things." The way in which we exercise dominion, the way in which we do it is to be a reflection of the image of God. And because we are to reflect His image, it becomes a moral issue. So it's not just whether or not we do it, but it's how well we do it, the way in which we do it. The third thing is this. Mankind will, you notice that bold print, italics, underlined? Mankind will exercise dominion in some way. It is built in us to take dominion over something and somebody, someplace, and somewhere. Mankind will exercise dominion, but beware of abuses. How do you abuse the charge to take dominion over the earth? One, there are two extremes that I'm going to give you. One extreme is tyranny and what I'm calling harsh slavery. Someone may take dominion over a portion of the earth, and they do so in a very harsh manner, enslaving the people and being a tyrant. They are exercising dominion, but that is an abuse of dominion. That is not reflecting the image of God in the proper way. The other extreme is the abdication of responsibility, just not doing it. So on one extreme, you got someone who is harshly does it. On the other extreme, you got someone who will not exercise dominion at all. Both of those are wrong. If we do not take dominion over what is our responsibility, somebody else will. If you do not exercise dominion over what God has given you, somebody else will. Usually the government. Or usually someone with the power or the wealth to do it. Now that's pretty easy to see. If I don't feed my family, what's going to happen? Somebody else is going to feed them. It may be my sons. It may be a food stamp program. But if I abdicate my responsibility to exercise dominion over what I have been given, somebody will. Somebody may take it from me. The next one, abdication of dominion leads to loss of freedom. Abdication of dominion leads to loss of freedom. Listen, there is always a price to pay for somebody doing what you're supposed to be doing. There is always a price to pay. If you abdicate your responsibility to exercise dominion, and someone else has to do it, there will be strings attached. Maybe not the first time, maybe not occasional abuses, but eventually, if somebody has to take care of you and take care of your stuff, there will be strings attached. And there ought to be. There ought to be strings attached. The next one. Occasionally check your production-consumption ratio. Several years ago, I preached a sermon, I don't know if any of you remember or were here, in which I talked about two groups of people. There were people who were investors and people who were consumers. Anybody remember that? And we looked at just some common activities that people do every day or occasionally. Just some common activities, and ask the question, is this activity an exercise in investment, or is it just an exercise that consumes? And we looked at several things, and the point that I left with you was to just kind of analyze your own life and see, do I have the tendency to be an investor, or do I have the tendency to be a consumer? And this is sort of the same idea, except I want to switch the word investor and use the word producer. And what I'm asking you to do is occasionally just look at your life, analyze your life, and see, am I a producer or am I typically a consumer? Now here's why that's important. We talked a little bit about this in our penny candy class a couple months ago. When you are born, what are you? A producer or a consumer? Consumer. A little bit of a producer or just pretty much a consumer? I knew somebody was going to catch on. Let's say you're just a consumer, all right? A newborn babe is a consumer. They grow up and they become adults. And as an adult, what are they? Or should they be? A producer. And a consumer, right? Should be. There's going to be some both, right? When you get old and decrepit and you can't get around, what are you? a consumer. Now here's the thought. There has to be that middle portion of your life that you produce more than you consume. You have to. If you don't, you are not exercising dominion. If in the middle portion of your life, when you are healthy and grown and able to do things and to work and to think, if you consume more than you produce, you are not taking dominion over what is your responsibility. You're just not. Because the day will come when you are old and decrepit, and someone else's production will have to take care of you. Now that happens all the time, and sometimes it is unavoidable. But the goal ought to be for each of us to produce enough in our productive years that when the time comes I cannot produce, I can still take care of myself and not be a consumption on my children or on the government or on the church. The next one, the debtor and the criminal are slaves and have limited ability to exercise dominion. I've named two people here, two groups, the debtor and the criminal. They are both slaves in the sense that they are not free to do what they want. A criminal is not free because he is enslaved or mandated by the civil government what he will do and what he will not do, where he will go, where he will not go, and yet he is a cost to society. The debtor has limited ability to exercise dominion. Why is that? Because a major portion of his production must go to what? His debts. I want you to think for just a minute about a debtor nation, the United States of America. We have a national debt of $16 trillion or so. 17. Doesn't take long to get behind, does it? If I pay a dollar a second toward our national debt, or if our nation pays a dollar a second, $1 a second, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, $1 a second, every second there's a dollar going to pay off our national debt. How long will it take to pay off $16 trillion? Somebody throw out a figure real quick. What did you say, Tim? 10,000 years. 10,000 years, Tim. Does that sound like too much to y'all? Over 500,000 years. Do you get that? The United States, one nation on this earth, has a debt that we have incurred in 100 years or less that we cannot pay off in 500,000 years paying a dollar a second. $1 per second. Now, there's a bigger problem than that. And we touched on it. Our debt is not stationary, is it? We have not come to the place where we said, okay, we can't go into any more debt. So we're stopping the debt and we're going to pay it off. No, we haven't stopped the debt. The debt is growing. Do you think our debt is growing at a dollar a second? More than that? About $1,000 a second. Who says more? Who says more? Who says $5,000 a second? How about 50,000? $50,000 a second, our debt is increasing. $50,000 a second. So not only do we have to come up with the money to pay off what we already owe, but we've got to come up with the money to pay what we're spending to keep from going further in debt. If we paid $50,000 a second, if we could come up with $50,000 a second, we could stop our debt from increasing. Then if we come up with another $50,000 a second, we could pay it off in 10 years. But $50,000 a second is a lot of money. Is the United States exercising proper dominion over the earth? No. There's no way. There is. I'm always a pessimist anyway, but I see no way that the United States will ever get its finances under control. We will be enslaved to somebody or tell them, hey, forget what we owe you. There will be hyperinflation or something that will take place that will just wash it away. I meant to bring some of those banknotes, Tim, that I had in the class. I have banknotes from Zimbabwe for $50 trillion. How'd you like to have a $50 trillion bill? A $100 trillion bill? $2 million? That's nothing, is it? You can buy legitimate. Well, they're demonetized, I'm sure, now, but you can buy legitimate Zimbabwe $100 trillion bills by the brick on eBay for $10 or $15. Well, no, not a brick. Brick would be $200 or $300. $200 or $300 for a stack of $100 trillion bills that tall, that is legitimate currency, or it used to be. Debt. It is hard to exercise dominion with debt. The next one. Guard against an entitlement outlook on life. Guard against an entitlement outlook on life. There have been times in my life that I have been tempted with this temptation. I'm paying my taxes. The government has all these free grants and free programs and this and that that they're spending money on. I just want to get some of it if I can. I'm paying taxes. I don't know that I can't remember ever yielding to that and trying to follow through with it. And I asking, don't do that. Don't get into the mindset that I'm going to grab all I can grab from the government. It's free stuff. It's program. It's legitimate. It's not against the law. All these things. If you develop an entitlement mentality that I'm entitled to this and I'm entitled to that, it will ruin your life. Social Security. I told you I was a pessimist. I don't have any hopes of ever drawing Social Security. Maybe if I could draw some disability now, maybe. But if a person pays in $5,000 a year between you and your employer's matching payment, $5,000 a year to Social Security, and I don't know how close that is to an average or whatever. And you work from 20 to 45, that's or 20 to 65, it's 45 years that you pay in $5,000 a year into the Social Security. You've paid in $225,000. If at age 65 you start drawing it out at $1,500 a month for 20 years, from 65 to 85, you will draw out $360,000. About a third more than you paid in. Where does that extra money come from? Somebody tell me. Other payers paying in. When I'm 75 and 85, somebody else is supposedly paying in, and I'm getting their money, right? Where else is it supposed to be coming from? Interest. They're taking the money I paid in all these 45 years, and if they're investing it, right? Have they been investing it? I thought they'd been robbing it. Okay, but they're also taking my money and that when I'm working and paying those people who have already retired, right? So I don't know if there's a whole lot to invest. Some people do. Some people live 20, 30 years past what they expected. Right? And then you add to that, that now we're living in a time where the baby boomers are starting to collect and not they're not paying in. So you've got more people collecting than there are paying in. It's hard for me to look at that and say, I paid this in. Where is it? If I'm not going to have it, let me do something else with my money. But it's easy to get the mindset of, hey, everybody else is grabbing all the goodies. I just want to get what I can too. I can get a grant to study butterflies, I'll study butterflies. Or whatever. The next one. Guard against an emphasis on pleasure. Guard against an emphasis on pleasure. If you're going to take dominion over the earth, and you're going to take dominion over your life, you need to guard against the emphasis of your life being pleasure. Let me tell you evidence that that is not the case in our society. When a guy who can hit a baseball with a bat, and that's about all he can do, can make millions of dollars a year, something is wrong. When a guy can shoot a basketball and put it through a hoop and make millions of dollars a year doing it, something is askew. I don't know who ought to be making the most money. I suspect it's the person who is the wisest and the most astute businessman ought to be making the most money. But I would think that someone who's given their life to help other people, say a doctor, I'm okay with doctors making more than I make. I think they ought to. And you add with that the threat that they have of liability, and you compare that to a ball player, something's not right. Yet why is it that ball players are able to make millions of dollars? It's because we wear their shirts. We go to the games. We are given ourselves to emphasizing pleasure in our life. Next to the lesson, train your children to be producers at an early age. Train your children to be producers at an early age. I don't mean by that that you make slaves out of your children, you never let them have any fun. But I do mean that children need to learn to work. And work at an early age. When our grandkids were staying with us, they were not used to making up their bed. It took them about 2 days to get used to it. And they can make up a bed. They can make it up. Jacob, the youngest kid, could make it up a nice bed. You know, he didn't do that on his own. We made him. We made him. He got up, the first thing you do, get your clothes on. You're not going to run around all day in your pajamas. Get your clothes on, make your bed. Produce at an early age. And then the last one. Everyone has something to take dominion of. You might look at me and say, well, John, green clay hasn't left me 1,000 acres. I don't have anything to take dominion of. Yes, you do. Everybody has something to take dominion of. When you were born, what did you bring into this world? Nothing. You were a naked little baby. Came into this world. At some point, as you grew up, you were 8 years old, 10, 12 years old, there's a transition from being a consumer to being a producer. And you start being both of those things, producing and consuming. There's one thing that all of us have to take dominion over. You know what it is? Yourself. Your body. Take dominion over your life. Most of us have more than that. Most of us have places. Most of us have some cash. Most of us have other things that we're to take dominion over. We can take dominion over, but we all have ourselves. Let's bow in prayer. Father, would you remind us occasionally, just remind us to look at ourselves and just see if we are high maintenance to those around us, or if we are contributing to the production of things going on. God, help us in wherever we're at, everywhere we find ourselves. God, help the world to see you, and we reflect your image on the earth.